fighting for America.
Russia continues to isolate itself by their actions. They're dangerous, they're provocative, they're irresponsible. This needs to stop.
Fighting for Idaho.
Of all the incredible moments of our trips to Africa, one of the most memorable was to bring Michelle and later our little girls to my father's hometown in Kenya.
Fighting for you.
If an illegal immigrant kills an American citizen, we're lucky to get that information out of the police.
You know, what we need to do is to crack down on the employers that hire the illegals. They're the ones that enable them to stay here and take American jobs.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Hoping you're having a great Friday and an even better weekend. You know, it's funny. Sometimes we sit back and we think to ourselves, because we're so involved in our work. Now, look, if you're working second shift or third shift, or really third shift, and you're going home, like our friend security guard Mike or Noland or others, you're going, I'm done. But if you're just saying, hey, yeah, great, Kevin Miller, that's Friday, you're done at 9 o'clock. Well, I'm done on the air at 9 o'clock, but much more work needs to be done, so we're going to do our very best to get you through it with compelling content, of course, provocative topics, and hopefully award-winning commentary. Joining us now is Joyce Malcolm, a Second Amendment expert, of course, from the Patrick Henry Chair of Constitutional Law and the Second Amendment George Mason University School of Law. Good to have you with us, ma'am.
Thank you for inviting me.
You know, we take a look at weapons and such, and it's interesting. The other day I was talking to a guest in here, great guy, great friend, conservative, and goes, you know, Kevin, I was in a store and this guy had a gun and he was wearing a gun. And, you know, I said to him, why are you wearing a gun? It's scary. And I'm thinking, you as someone who champions the Second Amendment and doesn't have a problem sticking up for it, where did we go wrong in vilifying guns in American society?
I think that there's this assumption that somehow the police are going to protect you all the time and that they can be everywhere, and so you can really just sort of withdraw from any responsibility for protecting yourself or anyone else. And, of course, that doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't, and certainly when it comes down to women and protecting women and such, what are your thoughts when it comes to women having the ability to defend themselves, certainly when it comes to dangerous domestic violence-type situations?
I think it's absolutely essential. I was at this hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee about a week ago, and they were discussing two bills that would have given women more rights to get temporary restraining orders against someone without that person being able to be heard until after his guns were seized. And there were a lot of stories about women being attacked by an intimate. And I certainly appreciate the fact that, you know, it's terribly important women be protected. But as I pointed out in the little time they gave me, the police can't be everywhere. There are a lot of women who have restraining orders, and some of them whose stories we were told at that hearing, who nonetheless get harmed or killed. The restraining orders are not really perfect. And I mentioned that it was far better to allow women to protect themselves than to expect them to have to depend on the police all the time.
Dr. Malcolm, is it a generational thing? We had this issue with a campus carry bill here in Idaho, and we had a professor, young professor, who I thought would, you know, rip the idea of carrying guns, saying, look, I need it to protect myself. But you have many people that are millennials, the folks in college today, that are saying, look, I'll just call the police and they'll be here in 30 seconds, which, you know, no matter how great your police department is, it's pretty unrealistic.
It is. It's a kind of irresponsible attitude. And also it's a sense that somehow ordinary people can't be trusted to have firearms. And in fact, you know, the people that get firearm certificates to be able to carry have been extraordinarily responsible. I think that I attended a conference this past week for students for concealed carry on campus, and there was a young woman who attends Dartmouth and who was being stalked and was really worried and wanted to be able to get a firearm to carry when she's walking through the campus because she was afraid that this man who was stalking her would come after her, and the authorities simply would not allow her to do that. And, you know, basically they're saying, you know, you can't protect yourself. And it's taking a responsibility that they have no right to take, I think.
Dr. Malcolm, we have this audio here. Let's just get your reaction to it. Here we go.
Please give me a fighting chance of saving my life and the lives of my students. In regards to this individual, he was in my classroom, in two of my classes in fall of 2012. I've had no interaction with him since then, but he has been fixated on me. I've had no contact with him. I don't know who his friends and his family are. If there is some kind of additional mental breakdown once he goes off of his medications, I've been informed that the reason why he had this breakdown in the first place is because he went off of his meds. There's going to be no one to warn me. I was fortunate enough that the police had been called in on this suicide attempt. If there's no one to catch him this next time, I don't know what is going to happen to me if I'm going to be able to survive. The only way I'm going to have a fighting chance is if they allow me to be armed within the classroom as well as those of my students. For the sake of myself, my students, and my coworkers, please give us the chance to be able to save our own lives if this individual or someone else like him decides to take out his anger on campus. If the only resource I have to save my life is to exit through the one door that the perpetrator is standing in, I don't like those odds. Neither myself nor my students are going to be able to escape with our lives. So please consider supporting Senate Bill of 1254. My life depends on it.
And we had a lot of educators. And Dr. Malcolm, you're in academia. You know the deal. They screaming, yelling, it's going to cost more. How dare these folks do it? We're going to have guns at football games. It was crazy here.
I think it's really important that that bill be passed. I mean, we had that terrible atrocity here in Virginia, where I live, at Virginia Tech, where a student who was known to be violent and had but was not taken off campus came and shot, you know, several students and teachers, and no one could do anything. I mean, there was one professor who barred the door with his body while his students jumped out the window, and of course he was shot to death. I think that the only thing to do really is to allow people who are properly trained to be able to carry weapons to protect themselves and their fellow students and classmates. And I think that would have helped at Sandy Hook, too, if some of those teachers had been able to be armed. I know there was a lot of complaint when the NRA suggested that after the shooting in Connecticut, but, you know, it really is an answer.
Indeed, and yet we have people. I mean, when you're teaching law at George Mason, what do your students say to you?
I think my students are sensible enough. I mean, they know my feelings, so I guess that they're kind of cautious about what they say. But on the other hand, I think that they realize that it's terribly important to be able to at least have some people who want to be armed to protect the rest. If you don't want to have a gun, you don't need to have it. But the ordinary citizens who are carrying guns have been extraordinarily responsible. Violent crime and gun crime has gone down. More and more people are being armed, and they are protecting themselves and other people.
Well, and you point out in your testimony that, crime has gone down. The homicide rate in this country has declined sharply, yet we have these things, and, you know, that are, A, number one, that's underreported, and B, you have the president is seemingly, every time there's a national tragedy, saying, we've got to do something.
Yeah, and what they have to do is never to act in the way that the young woman whose video or whose audio you played would have, and that is that people who are mentally ill to the point they're a danger to others are being treated. I mean, this man was on his meds on his own, and, you know, we're assuming he's going to take his medicine. I think that's one of the things that the country really needs to handle is a better way to protect the public from people who are, you know, severely ill to the point that they're a danger.
How important is it that, how important have the last few Second Amendment issues been with the Supreme Court, their decisions?
Oh, fantastically important. Because for years, as I've been studying the Second Amendment, there's been this huge crowd claiming that it was not a right of the individual. It was somehow a collective right for states to have a militia. And the Supreme Court was very, very clear in overturning the Washington, D.C. gun ban, that it is an individual right, that it's a right primarily for people's self-defense, and that that it should not be infringed upon to the point that that it deprives people of their constitutional right. As Scalia said in that opinion, you know, the enshrinement of a constitutional right takes some policy choices off the table. And some policy choices that deprive people of being able to protect themselves ought not to be on the table.
Dr. Malcolm, how scary would it be that a 5-4 progressive majority would rule? Would that spell the end of a lot of freedoms that we have currently with the Second Amendment?
I really worried about that because it was a 5-4 decision, despite the fact that the historical evidence and the legal evidence was overwhelmingly in favor of it, there being an individual right. And, of course, the great majority of the American people believe and always have believed it's an individual right. And the second Supreme Court decision in McDonald versus the City of Chicago, which overturned the Chicago ban and made the Second Amendment applicable to all states and cities, was also 5-4. And former Justice Stevens has written a book called, I think it's called The Eight Amendments, and he cites ones he thinks should be changed. And, of course, he would like to eliminate the Second Amendment. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is on the minority side in those two cases, also says there's no individual right. So given an opportunity, I think that the court would try to reverse that.
Let's go to the phones, and we're joined by Two Fly Bri for Dr. Malcolm at 580KIDO.
Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Malcolm, I received a relatively high score on the LSAT for the law school admissions test, and I had inquired with several law schools in the area here if they would accept me, and in that accepting that I would open carry on campus, to which they declined accepting my admission to their school. What is your school's policy in regards to OC if a person were to seek a law degree there, for example?
Well, I'm sorry to say that that our students don't have a right to carry on campus, and that is not because of the law school, but we're part of a larger university, George Mason University, and that's the policy of the university. So we have been working to try and change it, but we haven't been able to, and I think that's unfortunate. And I'm sorry for your experience. It seems, you know, we need
Certainly.
People like you to go to law school. So I hope that you would go anyway and then try and change the law.
Well, trying to change the law at the same time as well as going. Thank you for your time.
Yes, definitely.
All
I
right.
think Utah would allow you to carry on campus.
Utah's a pretty good state. Hey, let me ask you, just hanging out with you here at 580KIDO, what state is the most gun-friendly?
Well, surprisingly, I think there are four states that have no gun laws whatsoever, and Vermont is one of those. I mean, you don't have to get a license for anything. I mean, you don't think about, you know, Vermont as a sort of gun-friendly.
They elected a socialist, yeah.
Yes, but as far as firearms go, I mean, they have no firearms laws whatsoever. And they've been one of the earliest, I think now there's, I think it's Arizona and Alaska and I believe Montana. There are four states now that don't. But Vermont has had that tradition for a long time, forever.
Let's go back to the phones. We go to Tea Party Bob at 580KIDO. Good morning, sir.
How are you? And good morning, Dr. Malcolm.
Good morning.
It's nice for a change to have somebody that's from academia that actually believes we have the right to protect ourselves. Because for some reason, the dummies at our colleges around here can't read statistics and understand that gun-free zones are killing zones.
I think that's because they are just so wedded to the notion that somehow for public safety, only the police should have firearms, and they aren't really interested in the evidence that goes counter to their belief. So they don't want to hear it. It's very emotional, and they simply don't want to hear it.
Well, it seems like the more evidence we bring them, the more stonewally they get about having guns anyplace.
That's true. I mean, if they had their way, I think that they would take them all away.
How do you change
And that would, in fact, increase gun crime.
But how do you change their attitudes on this?
Well, I guess there are gradually more people like myself who are teaching and also invited places to teach. There's an organization called the Federalist Society, which sometimes progressives like to damn. But what the Federalist Society does is that, and it invites, it has student chapters in law schools, for instance, and they invite people like myself to go to a law school where the great majority of the faculty might be against the Second Amendment, but they get to hear me speak on behalf of it and often to debate one of the local faculty members. And I think that way it helps to kind of overcome the great bias in the academic community that is, you know, that believes that the Constitution is a so-called living document and that these rights don't mean very much.
Well, Well, some of our officers here at BSU think the Constitution is dead, but they had a meeting with Dick Heller on campus. They charged the people who held that meeting an additional $465 in security fees.
Oh, my goodness. What, were they attacked in some way?
No, nobody was attacked.
Security fees?
It was a way to stop that meeting if they could have, but they did come up with money. They have since then had to return the money. I mean, these are the crazy things that are going on in our campuses.
I know. It really is unfortunate, and it's unfortunate that that's what students are being taught, and that's what in some cases they actually feel they have to put on exams, you know, this type of that point of view in order to, you know, to get a passing grade or get by. And, you know, at least in my law school you can say what you want, and people have a variety of opinions. But it really is sad that there's diversity in campus for everything but opinions.
Exactly. Tea Party Bob, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Dr. Malcolm, we appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you
to your listeners.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. There we have it. Dr. Malcolm with us. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580-KIDO. Phone number is 580-5436. 580-KIDO, our top story.
We can act carefully and responsibly to prevent a potential act of genocide. That's what we're doing on that mountain.
The president ordering airstrikes now on ISIS artillery. Have we seen this movie before? The president says, trust me, we're not going in. Do you believe him? 580-5436, plus the latest concerning the Canyon County Jail. Let's get you to work safely and on time.
My brother, I love talking to you, and I love the panel, even the mayhem and the AM. It's great. It gets me going, it gets me laughing, and it's really great.
Must hear radio every morning.
Thank God it's
Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Thank God it's
580 KIDO, K Millie in the morning. Good to have you with us. Coming up, we'll speak with Canyon County Commissioner Craig Hansen on, well, just what's going on in Canyon County. We've got the headlines from the Press Tribune. Kieran Donahue's, the sheriff's salary has been cut concerning this work release program. A lot of controversy involving the jail there, what it means for you and your family and public safety as we roll along. That's coming up. And again, repeating it, the Canyon County Commission has slashed the sheriff's pay. This is just going to continue to get these folks going again and again and again. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Speaking of getting things going, our top story, the president is issuing airstrikes underway right now against ISIS locations in Iraq. Our question to you at 580-5436, do you agree with this decision? We'll have more on that in a minute. An issue that has been burning up a lot of people across the country is just the issue that Rodney King brought up. You know, can't we all just get along? And now a congressman from Alabama, Congressman Mo Brooks, has made a declarative statement against the Democratic Party on the Laura Ingraham show. Let's take a listen.
This is a part of the war on whites that's being launched by the Democratic Party. And the way in which they're launching this war is by claiming that whites hate everybody else. It's a part of the strategy that Barack Obama implemented in 2008, continued in 2012, where he divides us all on race, on sex, greed, envy, class warfare, all those kinds of things. Well, that's not true, okay? And if you look at the polling data, every demographic group in America agrees with the rule of law, enforcing and securing our borders, and every one of them understands that illegal immigration hurts every single demographic group. It doesn't make any difference if you're a white American, a black American, a Hispanic American, an Asian American, or if you're a woman or a man. Every single demographic group is hurt by falling wages and lost jobs. And so the Democrats, they have to demagogue on this and try to turn it into a racial issue, which is an emotional issue rather than a thoughtful issue. If it becomes a thoughtful issue, then we win and we win big, and they lose big, and they understand that. And as they get more desperate, where they're going to argue race and things like that to a much heightened emotional state.
There you have it. Congressman Brooks, of course, he's been lambasted by the media.
saying there's a war on whites. I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm just tired of the word war.
Go enjoy your beer and ride your ATV and watch sports. We'll run the country.
And we're seeing what happens when we don't run the country. We don't run the country. We're seeing the consequences of our inaction. You know, Dan Gaynor, our guest last hour, had a great point when he was talking about if you're a conservative, and I know there are a lot of people that use the term Tea Party, but I like the idea of the grassroots, and a lot of Tea Party people are fiscal conservatives, social liberals. So let me just spell it out for you. If you're a conservative, you've got, it's two on one. You've got the money and the party establishment. You've got the media. And if you're a Republican, you've got the media that's against you. And you've got the Democrats that are against you. But folks, somehow, remember the promise of the president? He was going to bring people together. Do you feel that the country's closer than it was 6 years ago? I think that's the big question, right? Do you feel closer now to all types of Americans, brothers and sisters, race, nationality, whatever, than you did 6 years ago? Think about it. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Last time we saw Canyon County Commissioner Craig Hansen, we were at the Garrity Walmart. Good to have you with us, sir. Good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you doing today?
I'm living the dream, and you?
I am doing the same, sir. Life is good.
Well, here's a famous Kevin Miller open-ended question. So what's going on concerning the work program and the jail?
Well, Kevin, we'll just lay this out here. The sheriff did not communicate with the board in any way or form or fashion prior to his letter to Judge Thomas Ryan on July 31st, announcing he was shutting down both the SILD program and work release center. To this point, really, still hasn't communicated with the board in any way, form, or fashion those intentions. I actually went over there on Monday morning to find out if, in fact, the SILD program was working, and it was shut down, according to the staff member that I talked with there. There were four staff actually there when I asked that question. And so what the board has decided to do is that this program is too valuable. The tax dollar savings for Canyon County and the ability for those individuals who have committed a crime and have a community service that they have been ordered to pay back to the community saves taxpayers immense amounts of money in the tens and thousands of dollars.
So what was your reaction when you found out through the media that the Canyon County Sheriff Kieran Donahue had decided to end this program because of the budget?
My reaction, I'm going to speak from personal and professional experience. I ran the jail. I oversaw the SILD program through the staff that was over it that were under me and my administration there. And we went through this problem one other time before when the staffing was at issue. And what we did was we took a creative approach to solve the problem. Sheriff Smith, Chief Deputy Gary Doolin at that time, and myself, I wasn't the brains behind it. I'll give credit to Chief Gary Doolin at this point. But we worked creatively to solve that. We did three main things. One of those was that we got together with the training department and worked with the Idaho Post Council to run our own certified detention academy. The other thing was that we, with those staff members or those new hires that we were looking at, increased the number of people that were doing background investigations so that we could do those more effectively or quickly instead of just the one or two people that are in that particular group right now. And we also used the it wasn't a crisis that we would consider at that time. It was just that there was an immediate need to do something. We moved some patrol people back to help manage that jail. and those programs. And it worked very well. It got us through that short time period situation, and we moved forward. So this is not a new thing. For the sheriff to say he's looked at all the options, I don't believe that's exactly the case before he decided just to shut it down. And I guess I will say one other thing with that. I firmly believe that this is a political ploy by our sheriff to unnecessarily and artificially inflate and fill the Canyon County jail inmate population for his own jail agenda, because, as you well know, we tried to offer a solution and to communicate with the sheriff and his staff to maybe add some beds to the jail with the fund balance that we have available to us. He wanted no part of that. In fact, in my understanding, he actually encouraged his staff to, rather than look at it from an objective purview to try and see if it could work, he said find every reason why it won't work. So I'm thinking there's a whole bunch of other issues at play here.
Commissioner Hansen, how would you define the council's relationship with the sheriff?
When I first took office, as well as Sheriff Donahue, I reached out to him and thought we had had a decent relationship. He was a corporal in the sheriff's office at the time. I was a captain. He was in the investigations unit, which at that point I was in the field services section and oversaw that. I thought it was really good and went on through there. Actually, after election, after taking office, I actually took him to lunch a couple of times and said, Sheriff, you need to stop fighting the county battles in the press unless you've actually communicated first with everybody. I hope that would help. It did not, and this was early on. And at that point, the sheriff has not ever really come to this board to communicate with it. In fact, I don't believe he's ever really tried to communicate with Commissioner Rule or Kathy Alder in any way. And I know that our relationship at best has become very, very strained to the point that the only time he talks to the board is when he goes to the press with his opinion and attacks us.
Canyon County Commissioner Craig Hansen with us here at 580KIDO. So to reinstate this program, what did the commissioners do?
Well, Kevin, what we've done is that we know there's other options. I don't have the statute sitting in front of me, but the statute says that this type of program can function under the sheriff or other entities, and what that statute says. And we have taken it upon ourselves. Misdemeanor probation is used by the courts to help deal with inmates, to try and keep those individuals out of custody jail settings, as long as they'll go out in the community, behave, act, and be productive citizens. And so we have decided that that's the best place to move the new Canyon County Labor Detail Program. And so we're moving forward as fast as we possibly can to get that up and running. And so we need to put the resources towards it to make that happen.
Sure, but we've got the release and the reports saying that the $3,000 will come from Sheriff Donahue's salary?
Sheriff Donahue has administrative responsibilities that he took as the sheriff to maintain and function with the programs that were in place. He does have the constitutional authority to shut those programs down, but we as the board believe that if he's not going to operate that program, we have to put a program in place because of the value to the county, to the taxpayers, to the families. If people can do their community service and not have to sit in a jail cell, which costs us far more money, by the way, and they can go home at night and be with their family and still fulfill their obligation to the community for their crime, then that's a program that needs to stay open. So that's what we're trying to do. And I personally believe there was no reason to shut it down. In fact, in the paper today in the Statesman, I happened to read a point where the sheriff says he actually kept part of that program open that he never bothered to communicate to anybody until Christine Rodine wrote it in the paper this morning, that he has some people doing personal work, well, not his personal home, but with the Caldwell Night Rodeo, that he's pulled he's keeping that program running, and my understanding is that the fair was in bad shape when Director Rosalie Cope talked, that they were having problems getting the fair all cleaned back up since the program got shut down, but yet a program that the sheriff is directly involved in, the Caldwell Night Rodeo, he's able to keep a minimal level of people over there doing what I believe is a personal, more of a personal agenda because of his involvement in that program.
580 KIDO, Canyon County Commissioner Craig Hansen with us here. What would you like to see your relationship, the council's relationship with Sheriff Donahue be, sir?
Kevin, if the sheriff were truly open to communicate, but I think even in the press release this morning in the Idaho Press Tribune, he makes a statement, it is unbelievable the dysfunctionality of the Board of County Commissioners. Well, you've got three commissioners, and we all agree, so I think that we have a little bit of a agreement that we're able to function together and make a decision and to pursue moving a program forward, whereas the sheriff seems to just want to attack everybody and say how wrong and how bad and how stupid they are.
Well, in the overall scheme of things, this is obviously detrimental to the rehabilitation and everything else, and of course the need for a new jail, which again you've been involved in and we've talked about several times. I get to ask the question, sir. I don't have to have the answers, but any type of solutions that you're willing to discuss with us here this morning?
As far as a new jail?
Well, I guess alleviating this situation, I guess restoring the lines of communication, if that is even possible.
You know, I think it's going to have to be based upon the sheriff wanting to communicate with the board. At this point, the only way he wants to communicate, as I've already stated, is through a attack mode in the press, and coming out against everything he disagrees with about the board, rather than sitting down across the table as mature adults and business and community leaders to address these issues and to present all the ideas, even on the record, because, as you well know, the board does everything it does on the record, public meeting, recorded session, minutes kept, and that's, you know, a good thing because it lets the people know exactly what the board's doing.
Commissioner Hanson, final thought, besides this big issue, anything else going on that you'd like to share with us in Canyon County?
You know, Kevin, it's still a whole bunch of good things going on in Canyon County. We have a lot of good working people, and I'm just going to say, unfortunately, this is the sheriff, Kieran Donahue, that's causing issues. There are hundreds of good staff members in the sheriff's office doing a very good job public safety-wise, managing civil departments, managing the jail, you know, all of those kinds of things. And unfortunately, we have a sheriff that really does not want to communicate. He wants to demand and dictate what's going to happen. And unfortunately for him, there are other individuals with constitutional authority that have responsibilities that are going to do the things that they see as best. So we'll see what happens here. If the sheriff is willing to come and talk to the board and actually have a reasonable, amiable communication on issues, we would love to do that.
Commissioner Hanson, we appreciate it. Until the next time.
Thank you very much, Kevin, for giving me an opportunity, and you have a great day.
You too, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There we have it, Canyon County Commissioner Craig Hanson with the latest. And if you're just tuning in, again, as we first reported here at 580KIDO, they will be restoring the labor program, which will allow people to go out and you know, compete in the workforce while they're doing their community service. And they've taken $3,000 from Sheriff Donahue's salary to pay for that program. Your thoughts at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Time to get you to work safely. And
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
It's harder to end a war than begin one. Indeed, everything that American troops have done in Iraq, all the fighting, and all the dying, the bleeding, and the building, and the training, and the partnering, all of it has led to this moment of success. Now, Iraq's not a perfect place. It has many challenges ahead. But we're leaving behind a sovereign, stable, and self-reliant Iraq with a representative government that was elected by its people. We're building a new partnership between our nations. And we are ending a war, not with a final battle, but with a final march toward home.
Yeah, whatever happened to that one, if you were watching the Seahawks versus the Broncos last night, you couldn't avoid but hearing this from the president.
I've therefore authorized targeted airstrikes, if necessary, to help forces in Iraq as they fight to break the siege of Mount Sinjar and protect the civilians trapped there.
Is there any way we could blame George Bush for this? Sweet William, can you check the files? Did George Bush have anything to do with this? I mean, really, George Bush is to blame for everything. It's George Bush's fault, right? George Bush. Boy, amazing. Let's get to traffic and then a final thought here at 5.
Continue to fight through the months ahead for my personal vindication would almost totally absorb the time and attention of both the President and the Congress in a period when our entire focus should be on the great issues of peace abroad and prosperity without inflation at home. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
40 years ago today, where were you, number one? And number two, did Nixon make the mistake of just getting caught? Think about that. And the uber accountability, Woodward and Bernstein, all the president's men, the glamorization of taking down a president.
I have never been a quitter. To leave office before my term is completed is abhorrent to every instinct in my body. But as president, I must put the interests of America first.
I wonder which politician, local, state, and national, still puts the country, the state, their constituents, the people, first. Kevin Miller with you, reminding you tomorrow it's the All-Star Panel. We like to call it Mayhem in the AM from 5 to 8. Hope you can join us. Good day. God bless. Keep the faith. Serving M.